Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, 347-884-8327. We're going to get to the calls in just a minute. Joining me today, my special guest is Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hello, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Well, great to have you here. We haven't done this in a while, and I'm excited.
It's been a long time. Gee, I feel like a rookie.
Well, we're going to start doing this a whole lot more, so you're going to feel like a professional soon.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah,
we'll have to do the snowmobile convention this year, or the snowmobile conference, the owner-operator snowmobile conference.
Yeah, there you go. We're going to get back into doing more podcasting where we have some more control over the content and we can bring on great guests like you.
Well, thank you.
All right, so I'm going
to let owner operators.
Absolutely. I'm going to let everybody know that this hour is a theme hour, so we're really screening calls for Bruce and Pittsburgh Power. Bruce and I will answer calls together, but we're primarily looking at engine-related calls. So Lisa will start screening those calls right now. Bruce, why don't you give us an update? You guys have had so much going on this past year. Why don't you give us a quick update on what's happening over there at Pittsburgh Power?
Well, we have our Dragon, our machine that holds the truck on the dyno. We have it painted. Debbie, at this very moment, is trying to send it from my iPhone to your iPhone, so you should be getting 2 or 3 pictures of it. We have purchased a new Semtech emission analyzer. We're in the process of getting that hooked up, and hopefully the gases that purge the system, the EPA-rated gases, they take a month to build. They have to mix 2 gases together. They have to sit a week and be tested. They mix a 3rd gas and then a fourth gas, and then it sits for a week or 2, and then it has to pass the EPA test, and that purges the system. And there's 4 different tanks of gas. And the one bottle has 4 different gases in it. So it's a very complex operation. And that's why
wow.
I see the Southwest. Yeah, Southwest in San Antonio charges $100,000 a test, pass or fail. There's another company in California that I understand is $16,000. Semtech starts at $12,000. So we're hoping that we're going to be able to do it for other companies in the $6,000 to $8,000 range. And for our products for owner-operators, there's no charge.
Wow. Yeah, that's outstanding. I had no idea it was so complicated.
All I can say is it's a good thing that I have engineers to try to figure all this out, because the terms that they use, I've never heard of.
Wow. Wow,
so
that's crazy. But between the dyno and all the testing and your team of engineers over there, you guys have discovered some pretty great stuff this year.
Right. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of work with our desktop simulators where you can send us your ECM. Right now it's the ISX and the Detroits. We can diagnose it, repair it, and make changes to it right on the desk. If you think you have a miss, it runs the 6 injectors. The Caterpillar one should be finished within the next 6 weeks or so. So we do a lot of ECM diagnostics work and repair. If another mechanic somewhere says he can't find the problem, he says it's the ECM. You know, everyone wants to blame the ECM. You go out and you spend $2,200 to $3,000 for a blank, then you get it programmed, and guess what? You still have the same problem. So that's why if you call us and you overnight it to us or stop by if you can, but if you overnight it, it takes us 4 to 5 hours to go through it, and we overnight it back the same day, you're only without it 2.5 days.
That is fantastic, and I've got to say, one of your ECMs. I did get to drive one of your ECMs, and I'm smiling just thinking about it.
It can be a rush.
What a difference in performance! Literally, it was like a new engine when I got it. It was absolutely amazing. What a pleasure to drive.
And you know, and it's not all cranked up; it's just cleaned up. It's just all the garbage
right.
has been eliminated from it, and it's been made right. Here's something we need to think about on Detroits. When you're pressure washing the engine, the front of the ECM that faces the radiator has a bleed hole in it. And I guess that's to let moisture out of the ECM, but that wasn't a very good place to put it, because if you're pressure washing, you can pressure wash water right into the ECM. In a couple of days,
that's
it sits in there, and it corrodes, and all of a sudden you have problems. So our engineers, being they're young and their eyes are good, but we have this huge lighted magnifying glass. They get in there with these dentist tools. We went and bought the dentist tools, like the little picks they use on your teeth, and we pick out that corrosion. And we can save an ECM by cleaning that up.
Wow. The other thing on the Detroit ECMs, what about the battery?
The battery and the DDEC 4s, they're good for about 10 years. If you start to see that your cruise control works sometimes and doesn't, and your gauges are malfunctioning, that's a sign that the battery is going bad in the ECM. It's a $250 deal to change that. If you're at Freightliner or any other place, you're going to buy a whole new ECM plus the labor plus the programming charge. So you're going to have probably $25,000 to $3,000 tied up.
Yeah, I was going to say $250 for you guys, and you're the only ones I've ever seen do that, replace the battery, or $2,500 or more if anybody else looks at it. That's a big
difference. We're the only one in the world that has the desktop simulator. I mean, it was a machine that we designed and developed, just like the Dragon to hold the trucks on the dyno. If you look at your iPhone under your photos, you might have a picture of it right now, Kevin.
Let me see if as a matter of fact, I do. We will get those posted up on our Facebook page, right after the show. We'll put that up so everybody can see that. That is a beautiful machine.
Isn't that something? That's a work of art.
It is. It's all painted up in Pittsburgh Power colors now. That's gorgeous.
Yeah. John Anderson, my welder fabricator, I mean, this guy's a genius. And he's, you know how I talk about people that were born in a truck garage, and their parents had them working on trucks from the time they were 6 years old? Just like a lot of kids, a lot of owner-operators that were raised on farms or working on farm equipment and working the fields in the barns when they were 6 years old. These people were sharp, and they've been working their whole entire life. And the good thing about it is most of them never retire, which is a good thing for this country. Good, hardworking people.
Absolutely.
Well, that's how John was. His father built tow trucks, and they would stretch trucks and build wrecker bodies, and then they'd go out and tow in wreck trucks. And then he went to Allegheny County Aeronautical Institute and works for Delta Airlines, 3 13-hour shifts, building jet engines. And then he flies home and does this work for us.
Wow. Wow. Great stuff. Hey, what do you say we get some phone calls? Because we have a lot of people on.
Let's go.
All right, let's do it. Let's start off in Utah tonight. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Bruce, how y'all doing?
Good.
Hey, I hope y'all don't hang up on me when I say this. I didn't know if you have anything planned in the future for the NBE 4000 motor, Mercedes motor.
We have.
Oh, really?
We've got a few of those out running right now.
Okay. What do you got?
Well, a lot of it you can't talk about over the air.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, if we tell you, we're going to have to send somebody out to kill you.
Okay. It's best if you get a load and come on by. There's some magic that can be done for that engine.
Okay. All righty. Would I be better?
We do have a manifold. We have a manifold turbo combination and some other things.
Is there any reprogramming on the ECMs or anything yet?
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right. Well,
I don't have the stimulator, and I would need the truck there.
Okay. Yeah, that wouldn't be a problem.
That engine, speaking of that engine, Bruce?
Yes?
Would you like to have one that you could keep for as long as you wanted to work on?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because I've got mine sitting in Kansas City. I bought that Volvo while we were in the middle of the trip last time, so I just parked it in Kansas City, and it's sitting there. All I have to do, I'll find somebody to drive it to Pittsburgh, and you can have.
Oh, that would be great. We have a Volvo with an ISX EGR engine that's a test truck that's there for our use, and I would have that MBE, and it would always it'd be nice to have a truck with each of the different engines, so that when we start the emissions testing programs, we can test the product, we can send off the results to the EPA so they can see that, yes, by increasing the efficiency, increasing the fuel mileage, we decrease emissions.
Absolutely. So I'm going to work on that. I'll figure out how to get it to you. And it's a perfect test truck because it's a nice, short, little single-axle day cab. Not going to take up a lot of room.
That would be wonderful.
Mercedes,
I'd love to have it.
I didn't even think about that till just now. So, Steve, thank you.
You're welcome. Bruce, what would be, just call up and try to get this scheduled in with y'all sometime or another? Or?
Yeah, give us a call and get it scheduled in and get a load this way and come and see me.
Okay. Are we talking days to do this or in a day time or?
2 days.
2 days? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
We'll have you one night and we buy you lunch.
Oh, okay. Heck of a deal. All right. Hey, I appreciate it. I'll let you get somebody else.
Okay. Hey, Kevin, do you know that we buy owner-operators lunches because we don't have a restaurant they can go to?
Well, I mean, you guys have always taken care of your customers. I mean, you have a great facility there, and it's not like going to the typical shop. It just isn't. It's a great facility, and it's a great experience.
I try to get around and go into the driver's lounge and talk to everybody, but some days it's just not possible. But I try to do that.
Well, some days you never get off the phone, do you?
Right, but my son Clayton now is taking a lot of calls for me, and he's doing a great job.
Oh, good. Good, good. Let's head off to Indiana. Ricky, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I was wanting to talk to Bruce about the power box for a C15 Acer.
Yes, sir. Right now, the power boxes are on hold. The EPA has us have them on hold. As soon as we get the emissions machine up and running and start our testing, that will be the first product that we test is the power box.
Okay, that's why I was wondering. I was looking at the website, and I couldn't find anything. Would it be, starting out, would it be better to do that or send the ECM to you first and let you work on it first? I'm trying to get better fuel mileage out of it. It's getting in the fives right now, low fives.
Can you bring the truck to us?
I might could, yes, sir. I mean, I run that. I run that area all the time, so.
Well, it'd be best if you came and sat down and let's talk, and let's do a walk around your truck, and let's make a wish list of the different changes you can make, because I have several people that are in the sevens on the A-certs.
Really? And that's just been programming it, and or are you talking rebuilding motors?
That's all kind of little things, you know.
Okay.
Starting with mufflers and different things, but you know, and that's another item that you can't really sell right now for ACERTs, because ACERTs have catalytic converters. So if you have an ACERT and you want to buy mufflers, you have to have your buddy that has a non-ACERT call and buy mufflers for his truck. Do you understand me there? Kevin, you're breaking up. Is it my phone or yours?
It might be me. I'm testing a whole new studio setup for these podcasts. So, is it getting any better?
Yes. That last statement that you said, we did not hear.
Huh, okay. We're going to go to Oklahoma. Jason, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, it's your turn. Go ahead.
All right. I've got one of these new PACCAR motors in a Peterbilt, and I've been real disappointed in the way that the power seems to be from it. I don't know where that motor is supposed to run and if there's anything that can do to help it. And what they've done also, when it hits, if I'm in ninth gear, got a 10 speed, it only allows the motor to run to 1600 RPMs. I can only get 55 out of it. Then when you catch the next gear, it drops you all the way down to like 1200 RPM, and you have nothing to pull. I wish they would let it overlap, let me run it up to 60, so then I could go ahead and catch 10th gear, and then I could run about 63 or 4.
You know, that's why I encourage people to buy 13 and 18 speeds for that very reason. But, yes, when the OEMs do that, when the OEMs think they know more about driving a truck than the owner-operator, that's where they make their mistake. Because if you're going up a grade at 80,000 pounds, it's impossible for you to get into high gear.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a terrible setup. We have not worked on that engine. I don't know when that will be, but it's going to be quite some time. Is there a reason why you bought that engine?
Well, the guy I'm working for bought it. but I was just wondering if there's something to do to help it.
Well, you can bring it by. We put a 13 or 18 speed microblued in it.
I'd love that. I don't know if I can talk him into it.
what we call our signature transmission, and we paint them gold. We just did an 18 speed. We're doing a 10 speed right now, and I'm ordering a 13 speed tomorrow. And right now, I'm able to get some brand new transmissions from Eaton at just slightly over a reman price.
Wow. That's nice.
I think what's happened, I think Eaton ran out of reman transmissions because of the amount of glider kits being built, and so they have to supplement them with brand new ones.
You know, that makes sense. There are so many people getting into the glider business that I think finding blocks and transmissions, and I think it has changed that whole supply chain.
Oh, it has. I mean, we just finished building a 6NZ signature engine, and it's sitting there, and I think we have 36,000 in parts in it, plus the core.
Wow.
And I think I paid $6,000 for the core, so I'm sitting there with $42,000 in that engine.
So,
but there's
Bruce,
there's nothing that.
Listen to these numbers for a second. I didn't mean to jump in there. I had a call last night, and we were towards the end of the show, so I wasn't able to question him as much as I wanted to, but he had a 2000 year truck. I can't remember which truck, but it had an N14 in it, and it definitely needed in-framed. But he went and got an estimate from a Detroit dealer, and they gave him an estimate of putting a remanned 12-7 in the truck. Everything included, wiring harnesses installed, the works, was less than $13,000. How do you do that?
Well, it can't be, because the engine, the reman engine in a long block, I think, is around $22,000. Okay?
Yeah, you know, I kept trying to question him if it was remanned, and then he said something about reconditioned, and I said, you know, you need to find out what that engine is, because it's not remanned.
Well, here's Cummins Cat in Detroit. The master rebuild kit runs between $10,000 and $11,000. Okay, that's oil pump, water pump, injectors, head, rod and main bearings, cylinder kits, connecting rods, complete gasket kit. So there you're starting out at, let's say, $11,000, because that's where it is for the CAT. And it might be a little bit cheaper for a 12.7. It takes $4,000 in labor to do an in-the-chassis. And then if you do the bull gear, if you're over $800,000, you need to do the bull gear. So now you're adding at about another $1,600 to $1,800 parts and labor. It needs a crankshaft damper. So if we do the damper and balancer with some labor, you're adding another $600 or $700. So if you're going to R&R an engine, by the time you pull it out and you change the mounts and the fuel lines and everything else, and you put another engine in and you do the wiring and you make the ECM talk to the dashboard and talk to the rest of the computers in the truck, you've got another $4,000 in labor.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I kept trying to question him because the numbers made no sense whatsoever. I told him that, you know, like I said, we were running out of time. Get some more information and call me back. Let's get to some more phone calls. Let's go to Wyoming this time. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Good evening, fellas. Kevin, once again, I put that scan gauge in that W9 with that 6NZ, and I'm getting 7 miles to the gallon, and thank you very much, and it sure sharpened up my foot control and the speeds that I'm running that W9 at. But being Bruce is there, I wanted to pick his brain. I just overhauled that truck in February, $25,000 worth of overhaul on that 6NZ cat. And like I said, it's getting real good fuel mileage, except in this cold weather that we're having now. I guess I'm needing to put something else on that engine to get a little better fuel mileage.
Did you do the manifold?
Well, I haven't done the manifold or the turbo, so is that my next conquest?
That's your next half mile of the gallon, that's correct.
Manifold and a turbo is going to give me a half?
That's correct.
Okay. And then what after that, do you think, Bruce?
Have you done the mufflers or do you have straight stacks?
I haven't done anything. I'm still running on that 90-degree double 90 off that factory muffler, and I replaced the factory muffler about 3 or 4 years ago, so it's time.
Put our muffler on it, and that's another quarter to a half. Now, the higher you get in fuel mileage, the harder it is to gain that quarter and a half, but on that muffler, in fact, you should do the muffler first. The muffler should give you at least a quarter. Some people say a half. If your muffler's clogged, it'll give you up to a half, and then do the manifold and turbo.
I don't think I'm clogged. Like I said, I just put a new muffler on there 3 or 4 years ago, but I think I was going to go with maybe like a – it's got fives on it now. Is either going to go to a 6 or 7 inch stack because they're getting pitted up from all the stuff we run in out west here, you know, the mag chloride and whatnot. So I was going to go straight off of that whatever muffler I end up putting on the bottom. So what is that muffler? Is that a
what
full
is it?
Flow? Yeah, I mean,
it comes in the front. And we have a as much as I don't like 180 degree bends, but we had no choice. We come in the front 5 inch through a small muffler, and then it comes out the back in 6 inch, and then it comes back up to your pipe that goes up to your exhaust pipes, and it comes back 6 inch, and then it reduces down to 5. But if you're going to go a 6 inch setup, well, I guess we could always cut the end off of it and make it 6 inch, and don't go too big on your stacks because always think about this. As exhaust cools down, it slows down. And the more it slows down, the harder it is for the engine to push it out.
Okay.
So 8
six,
and 10-inch stacks.
Right.
8 and 10-inch stacks could harm you. But 7s and down don't appear to do that.
So stay in that 6 to 7-inch range and put that full-flow muffler on there, and then we should be pretty good to go.
That is correct.
And then do the manifold and the turbo after that.
That's correct.
Now this truck's got 1.4 million on it, Bruce, and getting this kind of mileage. Do I need to worry about taking a few days off and sending you guys the ECM so you can look at it? Or, I mean, I've seen guys having problems with these ECMs when they get close to 1.5 million, but I don't know. So I guess I'm asking the question. Do I need to?
Let's hold off for another month or two until we get the desktop simulator ready, and then go ahead and send it in. Right now we're concentrating on getting the emissions analyzer up and running, and then the our engine dyno's coming in next week, so we have that to deal with, and then we'll be back on the Caterpillar desktop simulator.
Okay.
So,
all right, fellas.
So just hold tight
on
that for a couple months, okay?
Okay, well, thank you, guys. And, Kevin, you're doing a great job, and I sure thank you for everything you've done for me.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening and the support. Let's go to Corpus Christi. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hello? You there?
It's your turn. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. You're breaking up. I have a question in regards. I got an 06 Cat Acert in a 387 Peak. I bought it about 8 months ago. It now has $735,000 on it. And it runs great. I do oil sampling, oil change, and I don't even go through a gallon of oil at 18,000 miles on the oil change. So I'm real happy with it thus far, but I'm one of these guys that I'm waiting with bated breath. I want to know what the EPA is going to allow us to do and how to do it, because I really was going to convert this to a 6N style, and now I was wondering, should I just give you a VIN number from an older model and do it myself, or what are my options here? Because I like the truck. This is the first Cat I've ever owned, but I like the truck.
It's almost impossible to make that conversion at home. What we have to do is, once we have the emissions analyzer up and running, we're going to do a Cat, and we're going to do it before and after, and we're going to work on that diligently until we can make that engine cleaner as a single turbo than it is now as a dual turbo, and we're going to send the results, and I may even hand deliver those results to the EPA in Washington, D.C.
Well, good for you. I've been a follower of you. I started out about 15 years ago. I had a big Cam 400, and I modified that one using some of your ideas and parts, and so I've been looking forward to doing some work on this Caterpillar. So,
did the 400 run good?
Oh, that 400 run great.
That's
old
good.
Cab over, a $6,000 truck. I had more money in the engine. I had an old truck, but it made me money. I missed that truck, you know, because those old engines, they were rock solid, reliable.
They were.
One more question about these Acert Cats. How reliable are these turbochargers? Right now I have no problems, but I want to know what the lifespan is or what I should watch for to see. I don't want to heat a twin turbo and have it take out my engine or something, you know.
Right. No, it won't take out your engine. The charge air cooler will catch it. But the problems seem to be worked out pretty well. I think Cat's done a pretty good job of or air research and redesigning some of the failure parts of the turbos, because we're not seeing the failures like we did when the engine first came out in 04 and 05.
Okay. So, well, that gives me comfort. Like I say, I researched this truck. This is my third truck. My last one was a 379 with a Detroit, and I wasn't sure about buying a Cat, but everything else about the truck was perfect, and I could find nothing wrong with the engine, so I went ahead and bought it, and I've been very satisfied so far. So,
379 with a Detroit is a wonderful package, by the way. I'm surprised you got rid of that truck.
Well, it's funny. You were just talking about the ECM and the problems with it. I kept having ghosts. The truck had just shut down. I had it in and out of the shop constantly, and nobody could find out what was wrong with it. And finally, I got so mad one day. I was parked in my driveway. A friend of mine came along. He goes, we start talking, and he's like, "Well, I need a truck." I said, "It's yours. Give me $18,000. I already had $40,000 into it." And he put another $10,000 in repairs before somebody says, "You know what? We need to take a look at the ECM." They opened it up, and it had moisture in it, and that was the problem.
That was your ghost. So if you'd have just sent me that ECM, we'd have fixed that for you.
Well, I've 5 years ago, if I'd have thought about it, then it would have worked great.
Yeah, 5 years ago, actually, I wasn't able to do this, what we're able to do now, so.
Well, I've really followed you guys for a long time. I told Lisa I've been listening to Kevin since he, like, almost the first weekend he was on the air on his own show. And the things I've learned, I mean, I've been in the trucking business 20-plus years, but I've done a lot of things wrong, and I'm finally, you know, now learning where I've made my mistakes and doing a lot better. And I appreciate you guys' efforts for all of us.
That's what we try to do is, you know, when we learn the hard way, it costs a lot of money. So the fact that we've been around for a long time, we try to keep owner-operators from learning the hard way because we would rather you guys make money. It's easier to deal with you when you're making money than when you're not.
Yeah, it works for everybody that way. You know, it's amazing, Bruce. You've been in this industry a very, very long time. I've been in it quite a while myself, and yet we are still constantly finding new things and learning new things all the time. In fact, I've probably learned more in the last 5 years than the 15 years before that.
Oh, I can believe that. If I could get you to come to Pittsburgh more and spend some time in our engineering center, you'd learn a lot more, too.
Can't we move that engineering center to the West Coast somewhere?
No, the trouble is I have these guys that have been with me for so long, and they like living here. And
yeah.
You know, I was recently down at MicroBlue, and I was out on Lake Norman there, and I said, man, this is a beautiful lake. Maybe this is where I should have put my shop. But yeah. It's like Gary's been with me for 34 years. Pete and Pat are twin brothers. They've been there 27. And Amy and Brian Moan have been there, I think, 24 years now. How do you replace employees like that?
You can't. You can't. Not ever.
That's right.
You can't replace those guys. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You have
well,
to keep the shop where they live.
No, you do. No question. So, and you know, with our hours, we don't get to the East Coast unless we absolutely have to, because it just takes so much out of me to, you know, doing the show itself wouldn't be that bad. I mean, doing the show at midnight, I've worked nights before. That's not that big of a deal. The problem is trying to do the show at midnights and weekends and then still doing all of the other stuff we normally do. It just doesn't work for us.
No, I agree.
We'll figure out something. Let's go to Virginia. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Is there any programming stuff going on for the DD-15s yet? I got a 2013.
No, nothing yet. That's going to be a while. We have a lot of other things that we have to do before we start trying to figure that engine out.
Okay. The truck has a 10-speed right now. 55 with 22.5 low pros is about 1,200 RPM. Is that straight through, do you know?
No. What rear gears did you say?
I don't know what the rear end is. It's the 1,200 RPM at 55 miles an hour in top gear.
Yeah, but I would have to know the rear gears. If you 355s, 370s, or 336s, that's still the double over 10-speed, which is a .73 overdrive.
Okay, so it is an overdrive then.
Oh, yeah.
So there's one now, switch it over.
Yeah, we have to know one of the two definitively before we could tell you what the other one is. If we don't know for sure what the transmission is, we can't calculate the rear end ratio. Or if we don't know what the rear end ratio is, we can't calculate the transmission. You have to know one of the two for sure. Otherwise, you're just guessing.
Okay. Because I was wanting to switch this to a 13-speed and keep the RPM at the same range but have extra gears above it. That's what I was trying to figure out.
You won't have above it, but you'll have that gear to split it. And we're doing a lot of that right now, taking out 10s and putting in 13s and 18s.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of, you know, changing to the direct drive gears as well, the 264s, 279s. People absolutely love those.
Yep. I had a guy by a new Western Star with a 12-7 power kit, a glider that he had to put trans and rears in, and he put the 264s in it. And he said to me, if I could stand on top of a billboard along an interstate and yell to owner-operators, my statement would be, put in 264s.
Wow.
And everyone that I've done it for just loves it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing to think that the industry got so out of whack as far as specs that I would venture to say there was a time where I would say less than 5% of the trucks on the road had direct drive gearing in them.
Well,
it's just not
is,
very popular at all.
Yeah. Until you get out and you're dragging a load up a hill and you're looking at your boost gauge and your exhaust gas temperature gauge and you're playing with different gears, forget the speed. Bring the RPM up and play with different gears and get into direct, get into single over, get into double over, and always – let's say let's pick an RPM of 1,500. You're pulling that long grade or that mountain. And put it each one, or each gear, get it back to 1,500 and look at the difference in temperatures and listen to the engine, listen to the transmission, and look at the turbo boost gauge or the Kevin Rutherford scan gauge. And you'll see that when you're in direct, it's running so much easier, so much more free. By the way, we use your scan gauge on our desktop simulators. I don't think you knew that, Kevin.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's great.
No,
I love
that. Yeah. It's right above the engine fan. So,
perfect. Yeah.
We're
love
able
that.
To, we're able to check you out. We check you out every now and then. You know that.
That's right. I know. I got to stay on my toes.
You have to because Fernando and Ethan are really on top of that.
I know. I know they are. That's good, though. I like that. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Bill, welcome to the program.
Good evening. I have a question.
What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I'm talking that direct drive. You're saying I've got a 13-speed with 370s on low pro 24.5s. Are you saying to go into 10th gear at 1,500 going up the hills will be my best fuel mileage going up on a long grade like?
I'm saying 11th gear.
11th gear, okay.
11th gear, one full gear, two half gears. Now, I just want you to try this. I don't want you to go that slow going uphill unless you need to go that, at least you need that gear. I want you to just experiment with that and listen to the engine and listen to the transmission and feel it and look at how much cooler your exhaust temperature will be and how many pounds of turbo boost less you'll be using to go up that hill because you're not turning the other shafts in the transmission. There's two shafts that come down the outsides of the – I don't want to say the outsides, but it's inside the case but outside of
right.
the gears.
Right, okay.
And when, you're in 11th or 12th gear, you're turning those.
Okay.
You know what it reminds me of? An inboard, outboard boat. Kevin, when you were a boater and you had your Mastercraft, you were direct drive. When you would get
Absolutely.
In an I.O. and you'd push on the throttle, that front of that boat would stand up in the air, and it took forever for it to get up the cruise. That's because you're changing your power two times. You're going 90 degrees out, 90 degrees, or you're going straight out, 90 degrees down, and 90 degrees out to the prop. The same thing happens in a semi-truck. And that's why competition
absolutely.
Ski boats are straight direct drive.
Direct drive, right out of the engine to the prop and just putting all the powers going where you want it. And the other thing that happens, there are a couple things. When you're in those overdrive gears, you're turning those additional shafts. The other thing that the best way I get people to visualize this is like a – riding a 10-speed bike or a 21-speed or any of those bikes with lots of gears, when you are using gearing to your advantage, an underdrive gear, the underdrive gear allows the engine to work easier and do more work. That's what gearing does. When you get to direct, that's your most efficient, but as soon as you go to overdrive, the engine has to work harder to propel the vehicle now. the idea always was that it would lower the RPMs, which they thought was a good thing, but it's really not. It's much better to be indirect and not have that mechanical disadvantage from the overdrive gear.
That's exactly correct. In the summertime, I try to ride my bike's at 24 speed. I try to ride it 2 miles before I go to work. It's just really good to clear the mind. And I think about that all the time in all these grades. You know, when you're in 24th gear, how much harder it is. It's the moment that road slopes uphill and you just drop that down a few gears and you're just pedaling so much more free. And the other thing you learn from the bicycle and playing with the gears is momentum. You know, momentum will carry you further up the hill before you have to start dropping those gears. And that's why I always say you drive a truck like it's a loaded, like a roller coaster. And you accelerate on the downhills and through the dips and hold the power going up the other side.
Want to know something else you learn on a bicycle in the Columbia River Gorge? About aerodynamics.
And wind.
You learn about aerodynamics. We have some brutal winds here in the gorge. And if you're with the wind, man, you can just fly. It's a great day. So you have to turn around and come home.
Always ride against the wind going out, Kevin, and let the wind push you home.
Those are the kind of things you learn. You know, sometimes we say, you know, aerodynamics are the biggest factor in fuel mileage above roughly 50 to 55 miles an hour. Under that, rolling resistance becomes the biggest factor. But when I say that, people will say, oh, Kevin says aerodynamics aren't important at 50 miles an hour. They are. They're just not the most important thing anymore. But all you have to do is stick your head out the window at 50 miles an hour and tell me there isn't some drag there.
That's right. You know, you're familiar with Glenwood Canyon and I-70 in Colorado?
Oh, yeah.
Coming from Glenwood Springs towards Denver, it's uphill for 18 miles. And I rode a bicycle there about 10 years ago and didn't realize the wind was going from the west to the east. And we're just pedaling along, and I said, boy, this is so easy to go up this grade here. Well, now we turn around at Dotsero to start back down the grade, pedaled like hell. That wind was blowing at about 20, 22 mile an hour, and we didn't really notice it because I guess we were in the beautiful valley there and along the river. But what a hard pedal it was coming back downhill.
Yeah, it really is. It's amazing how much, and that's really, those are the things we're fighting when we talk about fuel mileage and physics. We're primarily fighting wind resistance, rolling resistance, and mechanical resistance. Those are all the things we have to overcome, and those are all the things that we work on. I mean, after engine efficiency, getting that engine to run the way it's supposed to, then we have to overcome all of those factors, and that's a big part of, you know, what we're always studying and working on. Let's get to some more calls. We're off to Colorado. Oh, what happened? Yeah, Colorado. Eric, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Kevin and Bruce. How you guys doing? Two quick questions. One, is there any effect on the Detroit Diesel DD15 with the fuels that have higher percentage of biodiesel in them? Is that going to reduce my fuel economy or what?
You know, my experience with biodiesel has been all over the board. There's nothing consistent about biodiesel at all. I get reports back from people who say when they started running biodiesel, they actually saw fuel mileage improvement. And I get the exact opposite from other people. They say anytime they run biodiesel, they get a fuel mileage decrease. The only thing I can think of is that there's not enough quality control in the biodiesel itself. And if there isn't, then we don't know. There's no way to predict it. There's no way to test it. But I have a feeling that the different blends of biodiesel just have different amounts of BTUs. BTUs is what measures how much energy there is in that fuel. But I haven't been able to find anything consistent. It's just all over the board.
Okay, and on that same note, is it going to make a difference whether I buy it from one of the big three or four chain truck stops with a little mom-and-pop joint,
Not that I'm aware of. The way I understand the whole petroleum distribution system is you never know where anybody is getting their stuff from.
Okay.
Back by our old shop in a little town called Indianola, there was a, and it's still there, they have all these tanks, and the fuel comes to them in the pipelines. And every time I drive by there, I see everybody's tankers there loading up. So regardless of whether it's Esso or Boron or BP or Mobil, they're all coming out in western Pennsylvania out of that one group of tanks.
Right.
So I think you're right there, Kevin. And I don't have a comment on the bio because I just don't have enough knowledge with it.
Yeah, I don't have anything, you know, really. Like I say, it's just not consistent. We just get reports all over the place.
Yeah.
Hey, Bruce, I do want to say one more thing before I forget this. I was thinking about it earlier. And I know you guys have tons and tons of stuff going on, and you just have to prioritize everything. But the one thing I would say from our experience is that when you look at which engines you're going to start figuring out, I would move that DD15 up the list. And I know you got a lot of other things first, but I would move that one up the list. That is a very, very popular engine.
I will keep that in mind, sir.
Yeah, we get a ton of phone calls here on the DD15. They're selling a lot of them. And right now, I tell people, absolutely, if for some reason you have to have a California-compliant truck and you're looking at buying a new truck, if I had to buy one, somebody put a gun to my head and said, you have to run California and you have to be compliant, the only engine I would get would be a DD15. I wouldn't mess with anything else right now.
You know what we recommend?
What's that?
We recommend a T660 with the ISX because we're getting not too bad a results from that.
You should sit here and hear all the complaints I get about the ISX. They're still losing cams on these things.
Still using what?
They're losing cams still. That same problem from back in 06 and 07, we still keep hearing.
We see it most with people. If the iron content in the oil is like 140 plus parts per million on iron, yes, it'll take out the camshaft. But that's about the only time we're seeing it is when the PPM on the iron is high or there's a million plus on the truck.
Yeah, we're still seeing a bunch at 600,000 and 700,000. The other thing we see on that engine, they've got some oil filter issues. They've got some oil filters that after 10,000 miles or so, they start clogging up and the oil pressure on the engine drops.
Well, 10,000 miles out of an oil filter? That wouldn't bother me. I'd just spin another filter on it.
Yeah, but I've just never seen that. I mean, the DD15 runs 50,000.
What's the micron rating of that filter?
Well, that's part of the problem. They had some issues with the filters. The micron was too small. But the problem was none of the shops know these things. I mean, we kind of identified the problem on the air and helped a bunch of people with it. But the shops just don't get it. And we just, on the show, that is our number one problem engine. The ISX. I have more calls with issues on that engine than any other engine.
Yeah, and yet the people that we see coming through our place, we're not seeing those problems.
No, we'll have to keep comparing notes. Let's get to some more calls because we've got a bunch still to go. Let's go to Georgia. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin and Bruce. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a 1014, Bruce, and I know you're a pro. Been tracking a fuel dilution issue since January.
Fuel dilution?
Yes.
Have you put six injectors in it?
I overhauled this truck in 11. I replaced two of those jet injectors to just pull the injectors. They failed. One of those was even replaced again under warranty by Cummins. And the problem they're saying is it's not enough fuel. I'm only getting 6% in 45,000 miles.
What was the percentage? I did.
6% in my last oil.
6%?
Yes.
6%, and they say that's not enough? At 8%, they tell me the crankcase can explode.
Huh. All right, let me tell you how to find this problem.
Okay, I'm listening.
Take off your return line going to the fuel tank. Put an air fitting in there. And I think it's 20 PSI. I haven't done this for years. You put 20 PSI in there. Pull off the valve covers, pull off the Jake brakes. Look down in there and see if one of the injectors is percolating like an old coffee pot. Are you old enough to remember the coffee pots?
Oh, sure.
Had a little clear cap on it. You'd see it percolating.
Yep.
You'll see the air bubbles coming up. And get a squirt can of oil and squirt down in the injector and around the injector. If it's coming up between the injector and the head, it's either a cracked head, and it's usually cracked at the injector hold-down bolt, or the top O-ring is bad. Top O-ring could be burnt or cut. And when you put those O-rings in there, when you put injectors in, you should coat the O-rings and the injector hole with either Lucas Oil Stabilizer or STP and a 50-50 mix with 15W40 oil. And have the engine be warm. If it's in the wintertime, plug the engine in and let the engine come up to about 100 degrees and keep the injectors cool because it's easier for the O-rings and they don't have a tendency to cut. Now, if it's coming on the outside of the injector, if it's coming up the inside of the injector around the plunger, then you've got a bad barrel and plunger. Replace that injector.
Okay, but how do you find it on the electronic injector?
Same way.
Okay.
Should be able to find it the same way. And also, have you replaced the seals on the fuel pump, where the fuel pump goes into the air compressor?
I have replaced everything on this truck. Matter of fact, I put 10,000 in it this spring when we went ahead and replaced the fuel pump, the oil pump, the air compressor. All of that stuff's been done. It did not change my fuel dilution a drop. And they even pulled the cam out, put cam bearings in it.
Have you put the dye in the fuel and they got up in there with that black light to look for it?
Well, that's the next step. My Cummins shop wanted to replace that warranty injector first because that was the last time the engine had been into.
Try the 20-pound air pressure, and we just had a 444 in this week, and we found the bad ones that way.
Yeah. I love my N14. I get over 8 miles to the gallon. I've got a 379 that pulls a chemical tank. It's making a lot of power. It's got a really strong program in it.
It's the longest-lived engine ever built.
Oh, I know. And I love it.
Yeah, don't let them convince you that 6% fuel dilution isn't a problem. 6% fuel dilution will wipe out bearings in no time. That's crazy. The other thing I would do is while you're fighting this problem, I would keep a gallon or two of Lucas stabilizer in there just to help offset the viscosity drop from all that fuel. Let's go to Missouri. Rob, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kevin, or good evening, Kevin. Good evening, Bruce.
Good evening.
Hello there.
Are you there?
Yes, we are.
Bruce, do you remember a while ago I talked to you about a C-12?
Well, I talked to a few people about C-12, so go ahead.
You were giving me some ideas that, you know, about lift axles, regearing the 279s, changing the 10-speed out to a 13-speed, and then you said that that C12 could put out 550 horse.
That's correct.
I forgot to ask you, what kind of torque is that engine capable of?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. I can tell you the people that are running the C12s with our manifold turbo and power box on power level 3, they're running right with their friends, right with or slightly ahead of a stock 550. So
okay.
I'm going to say it's probably 1,850 foot-pounds.
Okay. And what does it cost to overhaul a C12? I believe you said you've never done one of those yet.
I haven't, but, you know, when you have them apart, it almost looks like a C15, except the bore is just a little bit smaller. But it's hard to see with the with your eye unless you're miking it. But I would say that the parts are probably very similar to a C15, maybe $1,000 less on the master rebuild kit. Don't know. Can't answer that. I do know that we never see a problem out of the C12, and it's a great engine.
Okay. Now, that one that I was talking to you about, it does have a little bit of evidence of coolant in the oil, and it actually developed an oil leak during the course of the time that I had it. And I'm still kicking it back and forth of whether or not I wanted to purchase that truck with that engine in it. Of course, you know,
what kind of truck is it?
It's a 2001 Century class, 12-liter cat, short nose, can pull 51,000 pounds, really lightweight truck. It's had 730,000 miles on it.
Where do you live? What part
That's
of the
nice
country?
A nice setup for making money.
Yeah, I live in Washington State, but I run all 48 states. And it,
do you drive it now?
No, right now I'm driving. I'm back in my Pete that I was in that incident with, and hating the fuel mileage. And so I'm still debating on whether or not I want to buy that other truck and put some money into it. Put some money into it and make money.
Have you driven the C12 loaded over Snoqualmie?
What's that?
Have you driven the C12 loaded over Snoqualmie Pass?
No, but I did drive the C12 loaded up in Maine with all their steep hills up in Maine and Vermont and New Hampshire.
And were you happy with it?
Well, it needed more gears.
Okay. Yeah, gears really help. I mean, that's...
And, of course, the rear-end gears, I was limited to about 57 miles an hour without being over 1,600 RPM. At 1,700
we
RPM,
certainly
it started drinking fuel. So, but
we certainly see some good fuel mileage numbers out of the C12.
Well, I was getting 7 3/4 out of it, driving it at 55
yeah.
to 57 miles an hour.
You know, if
yeah,
anybody wants to retire and buy a motorhome, you can find one with a C12. It's a beautiful motorhome engine also.
It is. Hey, I hate to say it, Bruce, but we have blown right through this hour, so we've got to wrap this up and get out of here, but we will do this again soon. Anything you want to close with?
Yes, I want to say this. When you live out in the plains and you're driving on a lot of two-lane roads, even four lanes, and if you think it looks level and there's a creek or a river down over the side of the road, if you're going against the flow, look at your boost gauge because you are going upgrade. And it takes 5, 6, 8 more pounds of boost to go against that, even though when you look out, you'll swear that road's level. It's not. Because, you know, water only goes one way.
That's right.
So if you're loaded the same
right.
way both ways, compare your boost gauge going with the flow of the stream or the river as opposed to against it.
Yep. Good stuff. All right, Bruce, we will. We certainly appreciate you coming on, as always, keeping us updated. We appreciate all the work you guys are doing there at Pittsburgh Power, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you. It's always our pleasure.
All right. We've got to wrap this up, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you tonight for the live show. Good night, everybody.
Good night.